Let me interrupt you. So what you're telling me is that the CPI, according to the old numbers and the numbers that you're going on now, the 1981 numbers are, correct me if I'm wrong, and pre-1981, we would have a CPI of just over 11%. Is that correct? Look at the true, if you would, measurements of monetary growth and talk about monetary policy. So let's get into it here. So for listeners that don't know or viewers that don't know, John, how do you calculate or how do you come up with your calculations? If you could give me a 30,000 foot view. He wanted me to ask you because he thought you had a great chart of the price on gold relative to the real rate of inflation. Can you talk about that if you would?
Sure.
John Williams, how are you?
Fine, thank you, Andy. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I first just want to, as I said off camera, just thank you for coming on. And I just want to acknowledge that and say that again on camera. Thank you so much for coming on. I am a huge fan and have been for a couple of decades. And it's just great to have you on here and look at the true, if you would, measurements of monetary growth and talk about monetary policy. So let's get into it here. So for listeners that don't know or viewers that don't know, John, how do you calculate or how do you come up with your calculations? If you could give me a 30,000 foot view.
What I do, what you have to understand is that the government plays with its numbers. That's generally no surprise to anyone.
Yeah, right.
A lot of it's been open, a lot of it has been subterfuge. Just looking at the open numbers, when you get into things such as the consumer price index, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, which publishes it, redefined the CPI going back in about 1982, changing the methodologies. This was at the insistence of Congress. What had happened was that you'd had a very high CPI number coming out of 1982 into 1983. Excuse me, it was out of the CPI back in 1981, but it meant that the CPI was going to jump. There's going to be a big boost in the Social Security payments, and people in Congress realized, gee, we're not going to be able to have as much deficit spending as we want, and that really upset them. So they took direct action to bring down the headline inflation. And what did they do to bring it down? They didn't actually lower inflation. What they did was they lowered headline inflation by redefining it. They called in Catherine Abraham, who was the head of the Bureau of Labor Statistics, to say, hey, look, if you can find a way to calculate the inflation this way, we might be able to find more money for the Bureau of Labor Statistics. That happened. That's out of her memoirs. I kid you not. What they did was they redefined elements of the consumer price index, and in that one change, the changes that they made for that initial 1982, 1983 period knocked 1.5 percentage points off what had been the traditional headline inflation going back into the 20 teens when they started publishing the CPI. And going forward, they changed the numbers changed. If you were an accountant, you'd have generally accepted accounting principles and show what the old numbers were and the new numbers were. They didn't do anything like that. They just lowered the inflation and they kept modifying the CPI over time. Now, the one thing that the Bureau of Labor Statistics did, which I will at least tip my hat to them on, is that whenever they made a change, a year or two later, they'd publish the details on it and they'd say, here, we made this change. And this is how much it reduced the CPI by. So what I did was I took their changes and their estimates of what it affected, and I added it back in so that I estimated the CPI as it would have been had it been, if it was reported today the same way it had been reported in 1981 before they started making all these changes. The I mean, it's really criminal, and it's again completely against accounting principles if such were held to the reporting of the government statistics, but they're not. Right now, where that first change knocked 1.5 percentage points off the CPI, the aggregate understatement's about 8 percentage points. So that where you had, if you look at the most recent reporting, you're looking at the CPI at year over year, about 3 percentage points, 3.0. If you, that's the GDP. It's just too close to the number. Looking at my wrong column here, the CPI was 3.3%, and that was level with the month before. My estimate, which adds back in all the changes that they've made, was up at 11.1%.
Let me interrupt you. So what you're telling me is that the CPI, according to the old numbers and the numbers that you're going on now, the 1981 numbers are, correct me if I'm wrong, and pre-1981, we would have a CPI of just over 11%. Is that correct?
The ones in 1981, before they started adjusting it, the numbers were okay. But afterwards, right. So what I'm saying is, yeah, where you were looking at, were there, you're about 8 percentage points higher than what they're reporting.
That's what I want to know. So whatever they're reporting, add on 8 percentage points, and that's would be more of a true read of what inflation is.
And this is not just playing games. Yeah. If you happen to be retired and on Social Security, the Social Security payments are adjusted per the Bureau of Labor Statistics numbers, not what they would have been had they not played games with it. And that's the whole reason that they played the games with it, was to keep the Social Security payments suppressed so they could spend the money elsewhere. That, I mean, they I'm referring to here is the U.S. Congress.
Yeah.
That was the entity that changed this.
Wow. So I immediately think of my parents who are on Social Security and how this has affected them and why. Yeah, it's hard for them to make ends meet with the retirements that they have. And then Social Security is to supplement that. It's because inflation's at about 11% currently. I had a great conversation with Mark Faber, and he didn't know that I was going to interview you, and he brought you up. And if you're familiar with Mark Faber.
Yes.
And he wanted me to ask you, because he thought you had a great chart of the price on gold relative to the real rate of inflation. Can you talk about that, if you would?
Sure. What I do, and I'm sorry I don't have a visual to show you this as we're talking here, I do plot a plot of the old CPI, the current CPI, which is nice and flat, not going much above 3%, and the way it would be if it had if it was reported the way it had been before, and it's exponential, and gold is really your best measure of inflation over time, over history. I've plotted gold over a couple of thousand years and different inflation estimates, and generally it holds pretty close to inflation. And coming into the 1980s period, it was, you had gold and the CPI pretty much moving together. It's purely coincidental as in terms of the numbers and the level. But then when the government starts putting the brakes on reporting the headline inflation, you find that the gold starts rising against the CPI. And what has happened is that the latest gold, recent highs, still a little shy of my numbers, but very, it is closing in on my CPI estimates. And anyone who'd like a copy of that graph, including yourself or any of your viewers, you're most welcome to it. Just send me an email, johnwilliams@shadowstats.com. I'll be happy to send it to you, because it shows, I've It always gave me a little comfort to know that I was doing something right with my numbers, because the actual inflation and gold stayed together. And that was, that tells you something about gold, about inflation and about gold, because gold is an inflation hedge, has been historically. And it didn't.
It's really quite, I don't mean to interrupt you, it's really quite remarkable, but yet also expected, if that makes sense.
Well, people know how they're doing. You can't fool them. I'm not doing well. What's wrong here? I'm not making the money I used to make. Well, you should have been if you were in Social Security that was being adjusted with the CPI, but then all of a sudden the CPI's been cut. You're not making. And a lot of people recognize it.
Yeah. Now, off camera, we talked a little bit about the explosion of the money supply, specifically right before COVID, or during COVID, if you would. I'd like to talk about that, what happened then, and then the current inflation that we're having. If you could help myself and our listeners and viewers wrap our heads about that, because it is can be confusing. Why are we experiencing so much inflation? Go ahead.
There are two or three stories here in terms of what's happening with inflation.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
You see inflation up 3% or whatever it is right now. Actually, I do have the latest number in May was up 3.3% year over year. That's the headline inflation. The government started playing games with the CPI, redefining it to suppress it. The markets, you have different measures of inflation. And it is, if you adjust for my numbers and what they took out of the CPI, you'll find that the CPI where it tracked gold over time moved with gold. Gold is a hedge against inflation. It's probably holding physical gold is probably the best bet that you have to preserve your wealth and keep it stable over time, despite any interventions that come occasionally in the gold markets and such. You look at it against inflation over time, it's absolutely the best, because it reflects the debasement of the currencies. The currency debases, the gold price rises. And in the latest numbers that came out for May, the headline CPI was at 3.3%. My number was 11.1%.
That's crazy.
That's year over year inflation. And if you plot my index, which is coincident with the CPI, up until 1982, and then it starts to move a little higher as they keep redefining the series. But they didn't just make one redefinition; they made redefinition after redefinition. It really is criminal. But the CPI flattens out historically, but in reality, the way it was before, it's beginning to pick up exponentially, and that's one reason you're seeing the higher gold prices. The higher gold prices do reflect the underlying inflation reality. The people looking at that know what's happening. And it's reflecting, so it acts as an instrument for maintaining the constant purchase value of the U.S. dollar, valued in U.S. dollars.
Let's talk about the money supply and what happened during COVID with the money supply.
Well, that was the that this is what the Fed. The Fed is owned by the banking system. Its primary function is to keep its banking system members afloat. They can't let the banking system fail. At least that's my conclusion after watching their actions over a lengthy period of time. They make the changes to keep the banking system from collapse, which has been a danger over time. And with the higher inflation, they of course raised interest rates, and they're keeping interest rates high. Well, the banks may have had their profit margin structured at the lower interest rate, but you get the higher interest rates, it can, they can eventually structure higher profit margins. The liquidity has moved away from the where you were, you know, dealing with just a, you know, a couple of percentage points. Now you're seeing interest rates up around 9%, 8-9%, in some areas, or at least that growth in the money supply would suggest that's where it's going. You also have a federal government that is working against the system here with its federal deficit. You've got two big factors that are hitting inflation right now. One is the growth in the money supply, and the other is the growth of debt creation that's not funded by the federal government. Both are at record highs.
Got it. And that's what's...
And they're expanding rapidly.
And that's where this liquidity is coming from. Is that correct? From the money?
Yeah. Well, the money supply and the government's just keeps pumping money into the system as well, so that you have that those areas are moving the underlying inflation to a higher level. The official inflation numbers still reflect depressed inflation, because that's already built into the to the government's numbers. But right now, I've got inflation. If I've mentioned this already, please excuse me. But for the month of May, just recently reported, where the CPI was up 3.3% year over year, and that actually was even with the month before, and down from 3.5% in March, but up from a long string of months before that. The measure of the money supply is up 11.1%. That's down from 11.2% the month before, but it's the month before that was 11.3, which was a multi-year high. And that is what that's showing you there, is that you've got serious major inflation ahead of you. You have money supply in that level, you'll tend to get, you'll get inflation moving up in that direction. So I look for the inflation headline and inflation rate, even though it's suppressed by a lot of gimmicks, to move higher, you know, by at least a couple of percentage points in the next couple of months. It's on its way higher. It's not gonna sink.
Okay, so I want to just recap what you just said, so I'm clear. Is the money supply, which is really what's pushing inflation higher, that has been constantly high, and that is to you is an indicator that's going to say that more inflation is coming, and at the very best, inflation isn't going anywhere. Meaning that's not a positive outcome, but that's just inflation is going to stay with us, and the worst case is going to get even worse. Is that
correct? That's correct. Although, just a minor issue with something you said earlier. It has been, the money supply has continued to be to have been increasing here, and I'm looking for increase in the headline CPI beyond where we are now. But yes, it's going to, wherever they are able to hold it, it's not coming down for a while, and it's going to continue to inch higher as long as the money supply is exploding, and it still is.
Yeah, so I think this is such a key point and an interesting point. So it really doesn't matter. I don't want to say it doesn't matter, but it's, if the money supply maintains this elevation, Whether the Fed raises or not doesn't make a whole lot of difference in inflation coming down. Is that a
No,
correct thing to say?
That's correct, because the inflation, if the Fed doesn't act, the fact that you have the money supply growth so high, that's going to fuel higher inflation. Whatever the Fed does here, they've already created the inflation, and the higher inflation will drive interest rates higher.
Got it. So it sounds to me we're looking at a world with higher interest rates and yet also higher inflation. Is
yes,
that what you're saying?
They do tend to go together, and the inflation numbers are being understated, and so the related interest rates likely are below what, so a lot of the market rates will be below what you need to actually gain against it. What does gain against it is the physical gold and such,
right?
Over time, I mean that gets clobbered by the intervening authorities, but over time, that's, as I've seen it, it's the best asset. If you hold it, don't worry about the fluctuations. Just hold it over time. You'll end up whole in the end. It's the one metal that I've seen that just, I mean, shines all the rest. It does maintain its purchasing power against the actual inflation. It can be knocked around a lot, but over time, it'll save you.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much implications of what you just said, and I'm so grateful that you pointed out that way, because it makes a lot of sense. Well, things make more sense now, the reasons why they are, if you would. You got a Fed that's rapidly raising rates, or has rapidly raised rates, and yet inflation hasn't come down. And really what you're saying is, and I think it's a point that's right on, doesn't really matter. It's because
let me put it this way,
the Fed
doesn't necessarily speak the truth. When they know exactly what they're doing. Yeah, they're raising the rates to kill inflation. That's the story. We're raising rates, it's going to slow down the economy and bring down inflation. It's not the economy driving the inflation; it's the money supply.
It's the money supply
high because the banks need the rate high. It has nothing to do with controlling the inflation. The inflation is being driven by the money supply.
Got it. And it also makes sense why so much money is, if you would, I'm assuming all this money from the money supply made its way into the stock market. So that's why you have such high equity prices relative to a slowing economy. Is that correct?
That's correct. That's a good point.
Interesting. Yeah. I wish we had a chart of the money supply, because maybe I don't wish we did, because it probably.
Well, I will provide you with one.
Yeah, if you would, that would be great. And I'll put it in the story. Now let's speculate a little bit. Is a lot of this have to do with also the election, the coming election coming up? Is that the Fed, if you would, wants to keep liquidity so nothing would happen before an election?
Oh, they certainly have done that in the past.
Yeah.
I don't know how their druthers go at the moment, but if you want to keep the incumbent in office, you want a strong economy. If you want to replace him, you want a weak economy.
Right.
Whatever the intentions are, I'm looking for a very weak economy with very high inflation. In the year ahead, you should be seeing that by the inflation, by the election, which is not going to be good for the incumbent party, but it's not going to be as bad as it'll be, another 6 months later.
Right. So do you ever see the Fed, no, I don't want to say the Fed, but the powers that be, or I guess we could say the Fed, the powers that be, squeezing the money supply, if you would, or taking M1 down? Or is that, if they do that, would the whole thing fall apart?
No, they do. It's I mean, it's a you weaken the growth, you tend to weaken the economy, you also tend to bring down some pressure on inflation.
Right.
So it goes both ways. And the money supply does go up and down, but generally the trend, particularly since you've had the instabilities of the pandemic, have been to flood the system. I mean, again, when the pandemic hit, they flooded 30 years worth of monetary stimulus into the system. Those first couple of months, and it was still there when we went into the year ahead, March of 2023. And what they said was, they looked at the money supply numbers, and basic M1 was up 120% on a year-over-year basis. And, and people were moaning and groaning about, this terrible stimulus. And said, but look at it now. Now we're only up 3, 4%. But that's only because it went over the year-to-year, shifted to the year ago that had the big surge. It wasn't that they drained that money supply out of the economy, but the press picked up on that. And the money supply growth is only 3-4% year over year, but they forget about the elephant in the bathtub there. It's still extraordinarily inflationary. And if you take that, the money created there was unprecedented, and it's still fueling the inflation.
Yeah,
they don't have, they can't take it out. They got it in there, but now they're in a delicate circumstance, and maybe their year-over-year numbers will convince people to bring some rates down. But I think you're going to have high interest rates for a long time.
Interesting. I guess it's like, if I would summarize all this, it's almost like they opened up Pandora's box and they can't put it back in. And so we are basically living, or going to be living, for the foreseeable future, a time of relatively high inflation relative to the decades and the years and decades of the past, correct?
Yeah, that's a great analogy.
Wow. I don't know what to do with all of that. Yeah, where do we go from here? So what would your advice be? And I'm not saying just buy gold, but what would you say?
Well, there are all sorts of problems.
Yeah.
None of them are good for the average consumer, which is why, I mean, number one, hold the physical gold, batten down the hatches. The changes that they'll make, to the extent they pull things back, they can contract the economy, they can collapse the economy.
Do you think they'd do that, though?
They tighten things up enough. Yes, they can. They have in the past.
Yeah, it's true.
It's exactly where they're going to go with this, I don't know. Let me put it this way. And this is, if you look at their motivation, maybe it gives you a little bit of clarity. I view it, the Fed's primary function is keeping the banking system afloat. They don't care too much about the rest of it.
Right.
I mean, they're not elected by the public, although the elected officials do eventually replace them or such. Politicians would like to have a strong economy and low inflation. There's nothing that the Fed is doing here that's going to accomplish that. So that you may see some conflict.
I'm not laughing because it's funny. I'm laughing because I'm afraid.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, they're raising interest rates, which kills the economy. And they, at the same time, their money supply is at 35-year highs in terms of growth, up 128% against the pre-pandemic level with the basic M1, which is your most liquid. Yeah. And that's driving inflation.
So it's a worst of both worlds, high inflation, weak economy. Well, John, I think we should probably end there. but I want to say again, I am such a big fan of yours and the work that you've done and the work that you do. I just want to really encourage you to keep it up.
Well, thank you. Thank you so much. I will make sure I will send you. I'll send you some charts that may be usable with your clients here that explain a little bit of what we've been discussing.
Please, on that note, and I will have you on anytime. I'd love to have you on again in the next few months.
Anytime.
And I want to make sure you're okay and you're feeling better, because again, I know you have some health issues, but we're trying
to. Actually, I'm over the hump on that. If that's appropriate.
Music to my ears. So, music to my ears. I hope to have you on many times.
Thank you. Thank you very much for your concern. And I know I'm moving ahead to a positive here. So
good. If people want to get a hold of you and in touch with you, and they want to email you and to get a hold of your charts, and be a client of yours, how do they do that?
Just send me an email, John Williams, just as it sounds, JohnWillims, all one word, @shadowstats.com. And my phone number is 510-763-5786. I'm always happy to talk on the telephone.
I will put all of this in the show notes. And I should have done this in the beginning, John, but give us a little bit about your background. And I do know it, but I want to hear it from you. It is quite impressive.
Well, my father imported the steel chainsaw from West Germany.
I didn't know that.
That got me into, I was looking to get into that business. And I went off to Dartmouth College and studied economics. But I found that there were some ways of the econometric modeling, to which I was introduced by a very, very nice professor. His name escapes me at the moment, but I found that you could actually predict some things in advance with a degree of accuracy based on things that had already happened. You have all sorts of wonderful models that predict things, but if you're having to predict all the elements that go into it, it generally doesn't work too well. But if you have actual numbers, hard numbers that have been published, and they have enough leading relationship to what you're forecasting, you build models on those, and they have true causal relationship, that'll give you an indication of where that's going. And that's what I started to do, and found that I could do with some degree of being actually able to predict things a little bit into the future. You can't go too much further than a year with the hard numbers, but you can certainly pick up the major trends, and you know how the politicians act, and that's another element that goes into it.
Well, thank you, John. Again, to all the listeners that were going to listen to this, and I'm sure it'll be in the thousands. Everybody, John Williams is I have the highest amount of respect for him and his work. And I've been a follower, a listener since he's been doing this. I want to say it's been 20, 25 years. So thank you, John. I do appreciate your time.
Thank you, Andy.
You bet.
Appreciate your having me on the air and introducing me to your subscribers. Happy Absolutely. To talk to any of them. No obligation. Just happy to help anybody.
Thanks, John.